All of you?
Good
to be here. I'd like to read two passages with just a very, very brief explanation. We've been doing a series in our church on dining with Jesus. And when I started this series a couple months ago, I wasn't exactly sure how many installments we could get, but there's more than I was thinking of how many times Jesus is having a meal with someone. And I'd like to take some of the fruit of that. It's interesting, in most of the meals that he has, someone else is serving him. Except for this one, it's the other way around. I don't know if that's particularly significant, but there it is. I'm going to read first a passage that doesn't have a meal. It's in Luke 5, and it's an early encounter of Peter that it seems to me is reflected in a very particular way in what I'm going to focus on, which is the latter encounter, which is from John chapter 21. So one at the very beginning, one at the very end of Jesus' ministry, and I think there's some linkages here that I'll briefly make light of. So early on, Luke chapter 5, it came about that while a multitude were pressing around Jesus, as they're listening to the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, or Gennesar, not Gennesar, which is also known as Tiberias or Lake Galilee. And he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake, but the fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's. And he asked him to put out a little way from the land. And he sat down and began teaching the multitude from the boat. And when he'd finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let your nets down for a catch." Now Simon answered and said, "Master, we worked all night hard, caught nothing, but at your bidding, I'll let down the nets." And when they'd done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish, and the nets began to break, and they signaled to the partners in the other boat for them to come and help them. And they came, and they filled both boats such that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw all this, he fell down at Jesus' knees. Now, you've got to picture this. Jesus is seated in the boat. So Simon's probably on his knees, but at Jesus' knees. And he said, "Go away from me. I am a sinful man, O Lord." Now amazement had seized him and all his companions because of the catch of fish, which they had taken, and also James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Don't fear. From now on, you'll be catching men." All right. John chapter 21. After the various things that have just been described, now the previous things, chapter 20, seem to have taken place down south in Jerusalem after the resurrection. They're back up north. And after these things, Jesus, and I'm going to keep this, it sounds awkward, but it really is. He manifested himself. He made himself appear again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, or really Lake Galilee. And he manifested himself in this way. There were together Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, or the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee. That was, of course, where the miracle of the water into wine had taken place. Okay. And the sons of Zebedee and two others of the disciples. And Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." And they said to him, "We'll come with you." They went out, they got into the boat, and that night caught nothing. But when the day was breaking, Jesus stood on the beach. Yet the disciples didn't know that it was Jesus. And so he said to them, "Children, you don't have any fish, do you?" I answered, "No." And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat. You'll find a catch." And so they cast it, and they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. So the disciple, therefore, whom Jesus loved, said to Peter, "It's the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, which he'd stripped down for work, and he threw himself into the lake. And the other disciples came in a little boat. They were not far from the land, but about 100 yards away, dragging the net full of fish. And when they got up onto land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid, and fish placed on it, and bread. And Jesus said, "And bring some of the fish which you've now caught." And Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land, full of large fish, 153. That's quite a catch, by the way, 153. And although there were so many, the net wasn't torn. And previously it had been. This time it wasn't. And Jesus said to them, "Well, come and have breakfast." And none of the disciples ventured to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came and he took the bread and gave it to them and the fish likewise. And this was the third time which Jesus manifested or was manifested to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. Amazing, amazing story. It really is. Some years ago, was inviting people, as we like to do, to come over and visit this region and, see the places that are there and get a sense of the land and the layout of the land and the movement of the stories of the Gospels. And one of my friends, I thought rather appropriately, politely declined. And he said, and I'll never forget, he said, "I'd rather walk with Jesus than walk where Jesus walked." And I thought, fair enough. Fair enough. No demand to bring you with us. I agree. That's what is most important. Nevertheless, it is helpful for many of us who are visual learners, which is certainly a lot of us, to be able to see and put space and relationships together. And I admit, and I absolutely agree, and I know you do too, it's more important to walk in step with Jesus or in step with the Spirit. And that's the most important thing about life. And I think one of the ways we know it's important is the Bible uses so many ways to help us see what it's like to walk in step with Jesus. So sometimes it's described, and these are his words, of course, it's like hungering for righteousness. And you know, when you really hunger for something, you'll do anything to get there, right? If it's food or anything else, you'll pursue it. It's like having a mind that is open to the Spirit of God. It doesn't sort of dampen or disappoint the Spirit. That's another way to picture what it's like to be walking with Jesus. It's like a branch, right, connected to a vine. And it's connected and it's living and it's drawing its nourishment from the part that's planted in the ground. These are all ways in which we can picture what it's like to be walking with Jesus. Yet another one, it's like sheep that recognizes the right voice of their shepherd. Not other voices, but that one. And so they're following after the way he goes. I have started in recent years to say, I think everybody follows some voice. It's not a matter of, you know, you're a person of faith and therefore you do this, or you're just not. That idea that we have some neutral ground of non-movement, doesn't fly with me anymore, and I don't think it flies with you. Everybody listens to some voice. Some listen particularly to the voices of their friends because they're trying to impress their friends. Some listen primarily to their family, right? For them, the blood of family relationships is thicker than the waters of baptism. Some people are like that. Some just their peers, the people they think are exactly like themselves. Some people listen only to their own voice. I think everybody listens to some voice. Question is whose voice you listen to. And I'm interested in this because in this breakfast event, not only are we getting attuned to Jesus in the way he's working with mostly his inner circle here, but you know, they have an interesting challenge that we don't have. We have challenges they didn't have, but they have a challenge we don't have. These are people who are used to the idea of being, if you will, your average human being in day-to-day life, and Jesus was also there. And they related to him, if you will, humanly. Although they know that there's something pretty profound going on. But they see him, as we say, in the flesh. But things have changed, and they're not the same. And there's a number of ways to see that they're not the same. And this passage, among others, opens this up. Something has changed in Jesus. Something, therefore, has changed in the way they relate to Jesus. And that's hard. And you can see it in a couple of ways. And one of the things that stands out is this very verb, and I kept the verb, I read it from the New American Standard, he manifested himself. I know it's kind of an awkward thing. You would never say, I manifested myself in the classroom this morning. If you did, you're weird, right? It would be a truthful statement, but it still would just sound weird, because when you think of manifesting, as it's probably being meant there, something unusual has happened. Some barrier has been crossed. Something that would not normally have happened has somehow happened. And other people can see it. You know, because we all live in the here and now. We're tied, at least for now, to this space-time continuum. And it says it, and John's intentional. For the third time now, he's done this. And John keeps using this verb. He uses it some 18 times in the Gospel and in 1 John. It's a big thing for him. And it tells us to pay attention. It's what we sometimes call the self-disclosure of Jesus. Not just that he showed up. You know, we show up. But he presents himself. He becomes present. And he becomes present in a way that gets people to stop and say, something special is going on here. It's what Acts 1:3 calls, at least by one translation that I like, a series of confirming indicators that happen over a period of 40 days. Not just that these things happened, although that would be true, but they happened for a reason. They happened in a direction. They influenced people in a particular way that said, things have changed. It's evident to Mary Magdalene. You know this from the 20th chapter of John. She goes to the garden, that tomb, that morning to mourn. And she sees what she thinks is the gardener. It's a very reasonable guess. First day of the week, he's come to take care of things. And then when she realizes, Jesus grasps him, and he has that strange response, don't cling to me. I've not yet ascended to the Father. Remember that? It's a strange response. Something's changed. It's a task that's reflected in 1 Corinthians 15, which is a great resurrection chapter, which reflects what the Gospels do. Jesus died like a common man. Jesus was buried like a common man, except Jesus was raised uncommonly. And we have a bit of a change here. And on the one hand, we're saying it's the same body. And I'm going to give you two pieces that don't normally fit together, but they're both there. On the one hand, how do you know it's the same body? Well, because the marks of the torture are still visible and touchable. And that shows continuity. On the other hand, it's not the same exactly. Because here are these people. Here, like with Cleopas and his friend, Luke 24, who have a lengthy chat that seems to have gone for hours, and they didn't realize it was Jesus. They're just kind of baffled as to why this guy seems clueless about what went on over the weekend. All right? So it's changed. So the implication of the resurrection is huge. I am going to a very particular, singular point in all of this. Bear with me. Maybe you see where I'm going. The implications of the resurrection are not only that it happened, but that Jesus could not be bound by death, Acts 2:24. He was not able to be bound by death. It couldn't hold him, even if it tried. Or Romans 1:4, this resurrection, he was confirmed with power to be God's son. He would have been God's son without a public demonstration of it, but it's confirmed and done so in an open manner by the resurrection. as well as proof of the ability to atone for others' sins. We could atone as a sacrificial act, okay? Only in a general sense. Only in a general sense. I helped someone out, but not strictly that I atoned for his sins. That's that part we cannot do. And so this circling back to the beginning is, I think, is going on. How is it that Peter, the lights go on? Well, it's actually John first. Oh, it's Jesus. I don't know what it was that turned John's lights on, but with Peter's, it has to be, how do you know it's Jesus? Well, oh, I remember now 3 years ago, something like this happened then. Oh, I remember my embarrassment at the time then. Just go away from me. I'm ashamed. But not anymore. And the nets then were torn, but not anymore. You see, it's neat. It's really neat. This may be like a multi-package of miracles, literally, multiple things going on here. And they get to the shore, and of course, Jesus, in this case, it's about the only time we have it. He's always getting meals. I like that, you know. I like when somebody else cooks. He's always getting meals. This time he provides it. And the lights go on, whether it's the meal, the breaking of the bread, as it had been with Cleopas and his friend, or whatever, the untorn net, you know, one of these things. It ultimately doesn't matter. But here now is where I'm going. I'm going in just one place here. All of these things together say resurrection of Jesus' body. He had breakfast with them, right? If he was something not bodily raised, there's no need for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. By the way, they probably had two meals a day then, a late morning meal and an early evening meal. That's customary in that place, in that day and age. And so where I'm going is the essential doctrine of the bodily resurrection of Jesus. Something I know it's familiar to everyone here. It's nothing new. But it's one thing that's being challenged in many, many, many places today. Because it's seen widely as either he died, that's the end of the story. That's the message of the liberalism I was brought up with. And the wisdom of that says, we all know when something dies, that's the end of the story. And that's why you bury it, and that's the end. Or the other challenge is, and this is now touted at least by 1 in 5 people in the world, he never really died to begin with. Right? A substitute went in for him. But the message of the gospel displayed through events like this is he who genuinely died is he who in this body was brought back to life. And I'm not going to speculate on what eternity looks like. That does not concern me. God will do what he wants. But at least as we see it from this earth, he who died was he who was raised up. And he who was raised up, according to 1 Corinthians 15, as a deposit for us. Because whatever happened to him is going to be happening also to us. Amen.